Welcome to episode 65 of Central Intelligence Cinema. Today we've got a dossier filled to the brim with intel for you, as well as a spoiler-ish free first impression review of the series-style remake of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But without further ado, take it away, Pierce.
Beg your pardon, forgot to knock.
Welcome to the CIC, initiating security clearance.
My name is Napoleon Solo.
Bond. James Bond.
Natasha Romanoff.
Ethan Hunt.
Felix Leiter.
Elsa Faust. Identity confirmed.
Now, pay attention, 007.
Welcome to Central Intelligence Cinema, a podcast dedicated to spy movies and secret agent pop culture.
Your mission, should you decide to accept it.
Do you expect me to talk?
I'm in the middle of an interrogation. This moron is giving me everything.
Yeah, baby!
Special agent, you're not having a very special day, are you?
But remember, nothing ever goes according to plan.
Tom, what do you think you're doing?
Keeping the British hand up, sir.
The state will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Recording from an undisclosed location that's so undisclosed you thought we forgot about it, but we didn't forget about it because we're back! It's a Central Intelligence Cinema podcast. I'm Jason Greenberg, and with me, as always, Ben Esslinger.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jason. And welcome back to the CIC, the spy movie podcast that can't stop, won't stop, bringing you that hot, silly spy shit, no matter whether Bond has been recast or not.
Well, except when we do, and then we start up again.
And then we start up again. Jason, welcome back to the undisclosed location.
Thanks, Ben.
It's been a little while. I'm glad to have you back. I'm happy to see your shiny, happy face here.
Shining and happy.
And happy.
And happy. It's like they should write a song about it.
It is a beautiful day in the undisclosed, indeed. Absolutely. But I won't break into song again like I did that one time. Anyway, got an intel report for you today. Chock-a-block with some stuff. I mean, obviously, we've been gone for a little bit, so we've got plenty to talk about, as well as our spoiler-ish free first impressions of the reinvented version of Mr. and Mrs. Smith into that fancy little spy series / prestige drama on Amazon Prime. So that should be a fun little discussion as well. But should we intel, Jason?
Let us intel.
Looking for a news story?
Impress me.
Transmitting CIC intel dossier.
They'll print anything these days.
Jason!
What?
Ethan Hunt is back.
Oh, and what is the first picture they show of him doing?
Running.
Jeez Louise.
So great. Of course he's running with his hair coiffed. It's reaching Ghost Protocol lengths at this point.
Yeah. And it's like, so how much time has passed since the 7, right?
Right. Since
has he been running the whole time and his hair just got longer and longer like Forrest Gump?
I don't know. All I know is that I'm a little depressed that I can't hit the button for The Road to Reckoning because we're not on it anymore.
We're not.
Because they've changed the name. We're not going back to Dead Reckoning. They're just going to come up with some other... It's just going to be like The Search for Curly's Gold or something like the
something
Mission
like
Impossible, The Search for Curly's Gold.
Electric Bugaloo.
Exactly.
Do you know what? It was The Road for Reckoning worked.
It did.
For what it needed to work for.
It sure did. It was pretty great.
There's no more road to take because we're caught up now.
Yeah. Well, we still got to review Dead Reckoning at some point.
That's true, but you know.
But that's not really a road.
It's not a road. We've already traveled the road.
We've sort of
pulled off to the side.
Yeah.
There's like a little, you know, bench next to the ocean.
That's right.
Ate a sandwich, reminisced about taking the road.
That's right.
How it wasn't necessarily less traveled, but isn't probably going to be traveled again. And then you were like, Jason, stop with the fucking poetry shit. Nobody wants to hear that. Can we just talk about movies? And I'm like, no, you talk about movies. And then you were like, I am talking about movies. And then we stopped talking about movies for a while. But now we're back.
We're not on the road to reckoning.
We're on the road to talking about movies and silly spy shit again.
Exactly. But filming is definitely back in full swing for Mission Impossible 8. The Daily Mail recently posted this article with a bunch of different pictures and videos with Tom Cruise and the company filming at night right outside the House of Parliament in London. And there was this video, of course, of Tom Cruise running across the Westminster Bridge wearing a bloodied shirt under a black coat. And I do not write and tell me that I spoiled something for you, because for all we know, that scene will get cut.
What are the odds in a movie involving Chris McQuarrie and Tom Cruise that anything you see is actually going to end up in there in some capacity?
Right, exactly.
You know what was the best thing about that video, though, was watching the windup. Right.
Oh, I know. Right.
Right. Because like he's just running.
Yeah.
He's just running.
Yeah.
But he's in there and he's in there. Yeah. I'm surprised he wasn't shaking his hands, you know, and doing the little runner hop.
I was waiting for him to get in the track and field crouch before actually starting. But instead, he just kind of, okay, ready and go.
Well, you know, and in a completely unrelated and that sort of related sort of thing, I saw this video on the Instagram where this guy showed a unique way that his cat got ready to do a run thing. And he backed himself up onto the screen door and got himself like all like 45 degree angle. And then kapow, off he went. I'm like, you know who needs to see this?
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise really needs to see this.
Absolutely. There was also some shots apparently of Ethan running through the National History Museum. In the article, there were two photos also of Vanessa Kirby and Isai Morales. So we know they're back in the fold as well. And one other little note about Mission 8 is Katie O'Brien has been added to the cast. She's best known for her roles in Love Lies Bleeding and also her turn as the Imperial Communications Officer, Elia Kane, in the second and third season of The Mandalorian. So that should be interesting. We got some interesting ads for Part 8 because we've got What's-Her-Face from Hannah Waddingham.
From Ted Lasso.
I was going to say Joe Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
Yeah, she's going to be in Mission 8 as well. So,
really?
Yeah, so that should be interesting as well. I'll watch anything that she's in.
No, well, yeah, sure. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. I'm just trying to see what that character is.
I think she's going to be some sort of higher up military related person.
See, okay, because then I'm thinking,
because I know that when the news first came out about Hannah Waddingham, that's hard to say. That's a hard name to say.
Say it three times fast.
Yeah, exactly. Not going to try. But when it was first revealed, there was some little tidbit in the news about her having to shoot on an aircraft carrier.
Okay.
So
the first thing I thought when you just said that was that she's like an M character.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if
what
she...
What else would you... sorry, Han, I'm not trying to typecast you as anything, because right. I know you can do other things, but I just... That's what she feels like fits into the role.
High-powered,
high-powered espionage-y person within, I'm assuming, the English government.
Right.
Because she's, you
she's
know,
British.
British. Sorry, the British government.
Yes.
So sorry. But, I mean, I could see it, but... I mean, how many crates are they going to have to put Tom on when he's doing his shots with her to be eye to eye?
Right, I know. It's going to be, it's crazy.
Whoa.
Going to have to expand the production budget for Apple carts. Next up, we've got more intel about the upcoming Steven Soderbergh film, the spy thriller called Black Bag, which is set for a 2025 release. We got some new people cast, which are very exciting. So to remind you, this is a movie that's being put out through Focus Features, written by David Koepp of Mission Impossible 1 fame, as well as he wrote Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man, which is a really good Spider-Man as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed.
But it features Cate Blanchett, Michael Fassbender, Regé Jean Page, and Marissa Abello. But now, Jason, they've just added a Bond and a Moneypenny to the mix.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and it's my Moneypenny.
But is it your Bond?
You know, I like myself some Pierce Brosnan. I know that, you know, he might be slightly limited in his range, but... Doggone it, I loved his era.
I mean...
I loved his era.
His range as Bond was fine.
Exactly. He got the job done.
I mean, his range as Remington Steele was
That's
fantastic.
That's right. It is fantastic. But yes, we are getting Pierce Brosnan and Naomi Harris.
Yeah. In case you folks didn't notice, that's the equivalent of if he just said, and Haley Atwell for me.
Right.
Who, by the way, has not yet been announced to be in this movie.
Yeah,
but I would tell you, would immediately make it 10 times better. So
I'm sure.
I'm just putting that out there, Steve.
That's right. Also being cast is a gentleman named Tom Burke, who was in Mank and a movie called The Wonder. I don't know too much about him, but I've seen pictures, and he's like one of those guys that I'm like, I've seen you in something, but I can't quite place my finger on it.
the ever-popular character actor.
Yes, yes indeed. Plot details for the movie are still currently under wraps, but production begins in May of this year, so who knows, maybe we'll get a little intel here and there coming up.
I'm going to go ahead and predict that this movie isn't going to suck.
I am also going to predict that as well. I think this one's one to keep your eye on for sure. Also coming up, we've got the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare,
woo-hoo!
Which is exciting. And while Jason and I were out on mission, the Guy Ritchie-helmed movie released their trailer. And comes out April 19th. It stars Henry Cavill, Isa Gonzalez, Alan Richson from the Reacher series, Henry Golding, and Cary Elwes, Robin of Lockley.
Cary Elwes, you mean Wesley?
Wesley.
The Dread Pirate Roberts?
That's right.
Wesley.
He's in everything now that Guy Ritchie puts out.
Well, yeah, he's also in things that Chris McQuarrie and Tom Cruise put out.
He's just suddenly, he's had like a second rising of the Phoenix.
I think what happened was is he's sailing in on the coattails of Hugh Grant's resurgence.
Yeah.
Because he's really like the younger, slightly younger, but perhaps a little less dignified.
I get the feeling you might be easier to work with as well.
There's
been some little tit-tat here and there saying that maybe Hugh Grant's a little upset about things.
You know.
He's got a kind of an axe to grind about stuff. Casting.
God love him.
God love him.
God love him.
He's great, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, that should be very exciting. I thought that the trailer was good, but here's my thing. Here's my take on the trailer. It kind of reminds me of when we saw the trailer for Operation Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of feels like one of those movies that Guy Ritchie did real fast and real cheap and just kind of slapdashed it together.
As long as the sound quality is better in this one than Operation Fortune, I'm probably going to be okay with that.
I mean, I'm still going to watch it because here's the thing. The new Gentleman series that has been on Netflix of his is so good. It is, but
it's important to note he's just a producer on it.
Oh, is he?
He's just a producer.
Oh,
he did not write any of it or direct any of it.
Okay.
That I'm on. For sure not directing unless it was like the first episode. But I noticed that while I was watching that, I'm like, I'm not seeing Guy anywhere other than as a producer credit.
Right.
So,
well, whoever put that thing together is.
And it's, yeah, absolutely. It's great. Not that The Gentleman was a bad movie or anything. It was a great movie.
The Gentleman, the movie version was fantastic. It's just the new series is so good. And it kind of, not to go off on a tangent here too far, but I feel like The Gentleman series has a lack of things in it that has marred a lot of TV espionage shows recently, which is the big thing for me is tech. I've noticed that tech has been the downfall of so many spy-y things that they've tried to put out. Like I think about Citadel and how awful Citadel was, largely because there was this tech element. They tried to, you know, have the spy gadgets and like, spy gadgets hardly work anymore. You really got to be careful with that shit at this point.
I think at this point, if you're not making a Mission Impossible movie, nobody really wants the kind of gadgety stuff in a spy movie.
Right. And just don't even try and incorporate AI in some fanciful way because it's not going to work. No. I'm looking at you, Heart of Stone.
Absolutely.
You know?
This is what I keep saying. I don't keep saying it, but I say it periodically throughout our little podcast that we have here, that if you really want to make a good spy movie, you got to start taking this shit back to the 50s and the 60s because that's the only place the gadgets work.
Well, and I would even argue that you don't even have to, you can still make a great current spy series if it's based around story, if it's based around people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about Slow Horses, It's a great series, but it's all based on manipulating people. It's all based on that type of espionage where you're obtaining assets. You're
absolutely.
You're psychologically finding ways to motivate people to give you what you want. It's that type of spy stuff that's working. And, you know, when we get into the review here of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, it's kind of the same reason why I think Mr. and Mrs. Smith works so well is because there's a complete lack of focus on the tech and far more about the interaction between people.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I guess I should say traditional spy movies.
Yeah.
If you're looking at what one considers a traditional spy movie, so a James Bond film or something like that. If you want it to be tech heavy, you have to take it back to a time before the technology that currently exists is better than anything dreamed up in the last 60 years.
Exactly. Before iPhones, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving right along, not only are we getting a new spy movie in April, Jason, we're also getting two new spy series to watch, starting with Alex Rider Season 3 in actually just a few days, starting on April 5th. So the trailer for that, for the new season, dropped at the beginning of this month and will air on Amazon Freevee. So, and that season is based on the book Scorpia, which I still haven't read. Oops. And sadly, it will probably be the last season because it sounds like Otto Ferrant. I was following Anthony Horowitz's Twitter, and he was saying that Otto Ferrant kind of wants to either move on or maybe not even act anymore. There's nothing on his IMDb like going forward. So, but I'll watch it because I enjoyed the first two seasons, especially season one.
For completion's sake, right?
Yes, I'm a completionist in that respect. So I'll probably watch that. So that'll be something interesting to watch. And one that kind of came out of the blue, which I did not see coming at all, is a four-part miniseries that's going to be on FX called The Veil, which premieres on April 30th. It stars Elizabeth Moss of the Handmaid's Tale fame. So you've got, you know, a great actress there. She plays an MI6 agent named Imogene Salter. And the synopsis on the FX website reads, FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that explores the surprising and fraught relationship between two women who play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, the other a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. In the shadows, mission controllers at the CIA and French DGSE must put differences aside and work together to avert potential disaster. And the trailer looks pretty cool. I did notice that it's got some very Bourne Identity things where there's a bunch of people in a computer room with a bunch of screens and they're all like, Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne. Right. Type shit. There's some moments in there like that. But there are also some other moments where I'm like, all right, I'll watch this.
Yeah, you know, I think that's become so much a part of the lexicon. The situation room.
Yes.
The control room.
Yes.
Everybody thinks very that tropey. Spy operations are like
all
NASA.
Spy operations are like a NASA control room.
Yeah, exactly. They're on mission control and go, right?
I will say, though, that FX in general has been killing it. With a lot of TV. And so, like, I would trust that they would put together something that's
well, particularly
worth
with the four-part lifespan on it. So there's been – you're going to get something that's going to be fine-tuned, ready to go, moving along.
And it helps when it's finite like
yes,
that.
Yes, I agree. We were having a discussion about kind of this very thing about how much I enjoy the fact that TV in America has become much more like TV in Britain in terms of a season is a season.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get something afterwards, maybe you don't.
Right.
But everything's more or less self-contained.
Right. It's no longer expected that it's going to go on for season after season after season anymore. It's very it's very like, well, did it do well?
Yeah, or there's been some stuff that has done extremely well and they haven't made
it. And they still didn't make it anyway.
It's done.
Yeah, it's just
we did what we wanted to do. We're done. Yeah. We're moving on. We're done. We're done. Are we done? We're done.
And finally, we're not going to get out of this intel report, Jason, without talking about it.
I know.
Bond. Oh, how the rumors are flying. You can't miss it. I mean, it's everywhere. It's infiltrated. It's really upsetting to me because it's all based on this stupid effing article from The Sun and all these legitimate, or at least I thought they were legitimate, news organizations kind of ran with it. They just ran with it as rumors are swirling that blah, da, 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 da. But it's one article and it's from The Sun. The Sun is the least credible fucking rag on the in the universe. I hate them with a passion. Anyway, I'm moving on from that. But so basically what happened, there was a story that came out on March 18th citing quote-unquote insiders who said that Aaron Taylor Johnson, 33 years old, has been offered the role of James Bond by Eon and that they were waiting to hear back from the actor. They also claim that Bond 26 is, quote, on course to start shooting this year, which is horseshit! And that, quote, a script is now being worked on. First of all,
yes.
A couple days after the story came out, BBC, Deadline, and even E! News. E! News. It's so stupid.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So E! News, all three of those denied this claim. They all took a step back and were like, oh, this is total crap. This doesn't mean anything. Secondly, historically speaking, nearly every Bond movie that has ever been made did not start with casting Bond. It starts with hiring a director and developing a script first. It's just how things happen. Neither of those things have happened. We don't know anything about who's directing. We don't know anything about a story. Generally, something would have come out by now if that was, you know, if things were rolling. Everything I've seen, Babs is like, I'll get to it when I feel like it.
Sure. She's busy counting all that, you know, Casino Royale money. all that No Time to Die money.
All that No Time to Die money. And honestly, if I'm being just on a personal level, Aaron Taylor Johnson, not my favorite candidate for Bond. He feels kind of a little douchey.
Well, but so does James Bond, really. I mean.
That is true. That is true. I mean, was he fun in Money Train? Sure.
Yeah.
Was he fun in Kick-Ass as a kid? Yeah.
Dude, he could do the job.
He could do the job. I just don't think he's the best candidate for the job.
But I mean, who is the best candidate for the job? Look at the five guys that have played. Is it five? Is it six? I don't keep track. You know how many people played Darth Vader? One. Okay. So, look, I know that's not true either. So, save your nerdy comments. But my point, I think, is none of them were the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had cold-eyed, stale Scotsman goes to pretty boy Englishman. Right. Right. And in between, we got an Australian.
An Australian that just wanted to get laid all the time.
And did not know how to act. Let's face it.
Then we got a very serious actor who just was like ready, like had killer eyes in him.
Exactly. And we're like, wow, you're just slumming here, aren't you? Right? I mean, we all knew it.
You are much better than this series.
Exactly. We all knew it. And then we got Remington Steele.
Then we got Remington Steele, who honestly is probably the most perfectly cast person for the role.
Because he took all the elements of the first two. Well, okay. The first one and three, none of the two.
Right.
And kind of melded them into like this perfect Bond. He was a pretty boy, dead-eye killer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I love it. And then we jump to my favorite. Let's face it, because he was just like, fuck the pretense.
Yeah.
I'm just a dead-eyed killer. I have nothing going on for me other than the fact that I'm going to kill people. And hot chick, dig me. That's about it.
That's about it, yeah.
Right. So there's no real James Bond type.
That's true. We've run the gamut. Over the course of the last 60 years, we have run the gamut.
Right. And I think it comes back to what you say. It's more about the director and the script, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
They have to have that to figure out who's going to fit the Bond that they're trying to make.
Precisely.
Right?
And I think with Babs, it's more motivational than anything. But I also think she is sort of at a impasse where she doesn't know what the new direction is. She doesn't know what the people want.
Right.
You know, she's sort of like, oh, shit, I don't know. Maybe I'll just sit around and count some more money.
Yeah, wait until Amazon has a hostile takeover and then I can just be done with it. Right. Because, I mean, that's the thing. We really are at an impasse.
Yeah.
I know that from your standpoint, and I know from a lot of the other Bond people's standpoint, that killing off James Bond was the most heinous crime ever committed in No Time to Die. And yet, honestly, it was time for it wasn't no time to die. It was the exact time to die. Right?
I mean, it does leave you at a place where you now have a clean canvas.
Exactly.
And you can paint whatever you want going forward, whether that means picking it up before the Craig era or whether that means starting all over again or not even starting all over again. You know, if you think about it, Connery's Bond, he was Bond.
Yeah.
Right from the jump, he was already James Bond. You didn't get an origin story. You didn't need an origin story.
You don't need one.
You don't. You just need to catch up with him on his latest mission. That mission ends, and then you go back to base, and then you talk to M, and then you get your next fresh mission. And then you and that's how this goes.
Blah, 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 exactly. But they have to make a decision, because James Bond as a character is as old as James Bond as a character is.
Yeah.
So if you want to make, and I'm going to say it again, I only just said it like 10 minutes ago, but if you want to make a James Bond movie, fucking take it back to the source material and make it a Cold War James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's a place for James Bond in modern spycraft. There just isn't.
not the way that we've seen him. I think you could still keep it current. It would just have to be, you would either have to kind of go back to like a GoldenEye type of mindset where you point out all his flaws. But I think it would be far more exciting to do it a la Man from U.N.C.L.E., take him back to the 60s and 70s.
Make him what he was.
Make him what he was.
Where it fits.
Right.
I mean, you know,
and just leave out cringy, you know, barn moments or.
No, I think you leave them in there.
Or you leave them in there and then you just.
Mad Men was the most uncomfortable show that I couldn't stop watching, right?
There you go.
Because everything about Don Draper
was problematic.
Was problematic and insulted my interpretation of what a man and a human being should be in this day and age.
Right.
But I couldn't stop watching it. Because Don Draper was perfect at being that guy.
Right.
And they took no apologies.
Yeah.
They wrote Don Draper as what that man would be in 1963.
Right.
Right? I think James Bond has to be James Bond, but he can't be James Bond here without that level of criticism. If you put James Bond in his place and in his time, and people start complaining that he's a misogynistic asshole.
Well, it's like, it was the 60s.
Have you met anybody that was in 1960?
Right.
I mean, he's actually pretty easygoing for that kind of stuff.
Right. He's actually kind of progressive for this era.
Exactly. So it's either that or you have to fundamentally change what James Bond is to make him fit into modern culture. And then he's not James Bond anymore.
Right. Then he's not James Bond anymore. And what fun is that?
You know what? I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
Okay.
So that I can give it to Hannah Waddingham so that she has it for when she films her scenes with Tom Cruise.
Also in Bond news, oh boy, the 007.com store is at it again, Jason. Holy smokes.
Even this one I said, what the fuck? Really?
So they recently revealed its partnership with Fabergé and will be selling a Fabergé 007 Octopussy Egg Objet that is numbered and limited to 50. For those of you with ultra deep pockets, each one of these goes for a cool 115,200 British pounds, or roughly $125,000. Wowzers.
How many Aston Martins can you buy for one of those, I wonder?
Also, have you seen the picture of that thing?
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's dumb, so dumb. I mean, here's the thing. Somebody's going to buy these things.
Of course they are.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's going to be more people that collect Fabergé eggs, people that collect like high-end art buyers dealers. I think those are the people that are going to actually buy this thing much more than you might get like, there's a couple people, I'm not going to mention names, but people that follow the Bond culture probably know who they are that I'm thinking of. I could see them swinging for the fences and buying one of these things. By the way, it takes like 6 to 8 months for each one of these to be made.
All right, so you could be waiting a minute.
You could be waiting a hot second for these. But also, I will say, here's a funny thing. So, of course, naturally, as expected, after this thing comes out, you know, Bond Twitter, Bond social media, everybody's like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is this shit? This is so insulting. Nobody can afford this type of thing. Literally today, as we're recording this, I found out because I'm on the emailing list for the 007 store.
Sure.
I got another email today and they do this every time. Every time that the 007 store puts out some item that is wildly, wildly expensive and everybody gets all up in arms about it. Literally a few days later, they will release another item on the store that is incredibly affordable and actually kind of fun. And it's almost like they're trying to appease and quell the outrage because everybody's pissed off about this egg, and they're like, but have you seen this cool 8-pound sticker book with all of Q's gadgets, which is what they just released today, which I was like, I want that. I want a sticker book full of Q's stuff.
I'll pay it back.
With jetpacks and shit.
Hell yeah.
Like that. And they did the same thing. I can't remember what the expensive thing was that they put out. But then right afterwards, they did that, which I have, the apology thing that they put out was the Skyfall drinking game with the shot glasses and the scorpion. That was the apology for one of their other, like, outrageously priced. It was probably like a $3,000 pen or something like that.
Well, you know what it is? They're putting the high dollar thing out there because they know nobody can buy it and that everybody's going to get up in arms about it. And they're
it draws clicks.
That's what I'm saying. And so everybody's going to be like, that's horseshit. But then they're going to show something everybody wants.
Right.
And to make sure that they get all of those sold, they dovetail it with the thing that's going to generate the buzz.
Right.
People are out to pull it. Oh, actually, that's kind of cool. Well, I can afford that. Click, click, click.
Click, click, done. Here, please take my 8 pounds. Also, in more affordable and, I might add, educational offerings from Bond, the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry has now opened their new exhibition called 007 Science, Inventing the World of James Bond. From the museum's webpage, it says, go behind the scenes to learn how the Bond production teams harness real-world science to craft 007's on-screen adventures. See fantastical gadgets created for the Bond films alongside the real-life inventions they prefigured. See a prototype jetpack from Thunderball and the modern Gravity Industries jet suit. You'll also enter a lab space inspired by Q, the source of the secret field technologies in the Bond movies, and test your abilities to design the perfect spy vehicle, dangle from a steel beam, and devise amazing stunts. So, Jason's just kind of like, whatever.
Look. 20 some odd years ago, they had this huge thing that was going around called the Star Trek, the Next Generation Science Exhibit, something. Came to our local natural history museum, and I was obviously very enthused about this. So I went to this thing, and it was the biggest piece of six-year-old sixth grade level horseshit that I've ever spent money on. Super disappointed. Totally designed for kids. There wasn't even a bone thrown to the adults who might want to go do this.
Right.
Thing. So every time something like this comes out, I'm like, I'm not going there. It's not worth it.
Yeah. You know, I've heard things about that, about the Spy Museum in DC. But I will say that because now that they have the Bond in Motion exhibit there, now it's like, well, now I could go. And even if I'm disappointed with the Spy Museum's normal fare, at least they've got the Bond in Motion exhibit, which I know is cool.
Right. I mean, not to disparage. If you live in Chicago and you want to go see this because you like James Bond, go.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
It's $18 a ticket during the day and $35 at night. It's not that expensive.
Definitely go during the day.
Definitely go during the day.
Tamper your expectations.
That's right.
And then, our tens of listeners, if one of you does go and it's awesome, please tell us at I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I'd love to hear you guys tell me I suck.
Well, if there's one thing we always encourage, you know, it's interaction. So email, if you do go get to see this thing, please email us back. Shoot me a message over Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah.
My DMs are open. But email is cicdeaddrop@gmail.com. Instagram is Central Intelligence Cinema, separated by underscores. And all of our other socials are available in links at the bottom of the show description of this very episode.
So, shameless plug.
Shameless plug.
But I'm a shameless guy.
There is one last piece of intel, which isn't even on our notes, I have to mention.
Oh, dear.
So just wanted to put out there that the day after this episode should go out, I'm just going to, a little ahead of time, wish a very, very happy birthday to my main man right here.
What?
Agent Jason Greenberg.
Who? Preposterous.
Indeed. So.
Preposterous. Well, thank you, Ben.
So, and everybody, when this episode releases, you should, in the comments, you should say happy birthday to Jason, because that would be very nice.
case anybody's curious, it's my 29th birthday.
That's right. Of course it is.
For the 25th year in a row.
You look you look a little weathered for 29, but it's fine.
It's not the years, honey. It's the mileage.
But shall we talk about Mr. and Mrs. Smith a little?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Okay.
We're here anyway.
Now, before we go too far, just to avoid any confusion, please know that we are talking about the recent 2024 series version of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, not the 1996 version starring Scott Bakula and Maria Bello, who James Page of MI6 told me about this.
No, I know about this.
I had no idea it existed. This was a thing. And I even found episodes of it on YouTube that you can watch.
So here's the thing. I know this existed and yet did not remember it until you just said that. I believe I may have watched a couple of these episodes, actually.
Well, I mean, it's Scott Bakula. He's great.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Anything Scott Bakula in gets at least three watchings episodes before I bail out.
Who knows? But maybe in a future Intel report, we'll review the Scott Bakula version of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I'm going to go ahead and predict that, Black Bag being an excellent movie, that is never going to happen.
So the version of this series that I'm referring to is from 2024, written and created by Donald Glover and Francesca Sloan. Obviously, Donald Glover is of
Donald Glover fame.
Donald Glover fame.
Lando Calrissian fame.
Yeah, for the new gen. Lando Calrissian for the new gen.
And one half of Troy and Abbott in the morning.
He also created Atlanta. And then Francesca Sloan also was a producer on Atlanta. And she was a producer on Fargo. And this whole show is largely a Atlanta crew joint.
It doesn't surprise me. It kind of feels like it was basically Donald Glover.
It was his whole baby from the get-go, which also, you know, kind of explains why after just a few months into creating this thing, Phoebe Waller-Bridge backed away, citing creative differences, at which point they brought in Maya Erskine to take over the role of Jane, and then Francesca Sloan kind of took over as co-creator at that point. Both have exec producer credits, and then Glover actually directed one of the episodes. Other directors on this series included Karina Evans, who did P-Valley, Hiro Murai, who also worked on Atlanta, and The Bear, and then Amy Simetz was also on Atlanta, and then she also worked on The Girlfriend Experience, and then Christian Sprenger was also on Atlanta and on something called Station 11. Christian Sprenger was also doubled as cinematographer, as well as two other Atlanta crew veterans, Stephen Murphy and Cody Jacobs.
So he's just keeping everybody working.
He is. He's just keeping everybody working, and I think it worked out real. I mean, I think it's a great series. I mean,
I enjoyed the heck out of it. And, you know, I absolutely love Phoebe Waller-Bridge. But, you know, when I'm reading the article about, you know, why she ended up leaving the show, and it just really sounded like, you know, Donald Glover, this was his baby.
Yeah.
He brought her in because they had good working relationship.
Sure.
From Solo.
Yeah.
And let's face it. I mean, most of what she touches is pretty much gold.
Yes.
Right. But as you pointed out, ship could only have one captain.
That's right.
And both of them were captains of the ship.
Yes. I will say, though, from a casting perspective, that's the part where I felt like she was never a great fit to begin with, because she, well, for one thing, she would tower over Donald Glover.
Absolutely.
But even aside from that, she, like, takes over every scene she is in. And whether that's just what she does, or just because of how tall she is, or how she looks, or just her whole aura, but it wasn't right for this show.
No, because she's a leading lady, right?
Absolutely.
She can play supporting roles, but most of the stuff she's in is produced by her for her.
Right. And honestly, I would actually go so far to say she probably would be a terrible supporting actor because she's so captivating on screen.
Well, unless you make her into a droid, in which case, you know, you take that all out of it. But she was very support actor-y in Dial of Destiny.
I suppose. Right. Well,
but I mean,
see, even there, even in Dial of Destiny, I thought she was just barely. I mean,
she got as much screen time as every other female
actor
did in any Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah. But I mean,
it's an unfair comparison. It's Harrison Ford.
Yeah. I mean, Harrison Ford is going to Harrison Ford his way through Dial of Destiny, and he's going to be the focal point. But at the same time, Phoebe Waller-Bridge was a worthy...
oh, yes.
You know... Opposite to,
she was right there with like Karen Allen in Raiders, right?
Right.
You know, so
very much so.
She was very much on his level, not in the supporting role.
Exactly. It wasn't like Temple of Doom where,
right.
You know, Kate, what's her face?
Well, and you know, the thing is in this particular show, her character, much like Maya Erskine's version of this character, is supposed to be the more dominant one in terms of the professionality, the get it done kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Glover's character is a little bit more laid back, easygoing,
right.
But knows his shit.
Yeah.
His character waits for things to happen and puts himself in it, whereas Maya Erskine's character makes things happen to put herself into.
Right.
And if that was a dynamic that was going to be between the two of them, with Phoebe Waller-Bridge in the thing, it was never going to work.
No.
Because he would have been too passive for her presence.
He would have almost disintegrated. By
exactly.
Like, you'd barely even know he was there. Whereas Maya Erskine is able to play it a little bit more subtly.
Right.
So that they both still exist.
Absolutely.
Music-wise, David Fleming, who did The Last of Us, as well as a couple of the Blue Planet shows, did the music. Although... aside from, well, the music, and I think the music works really, really well. It feels very current. And I thought some of the international sounding needle drops, the Spanishy flair needle drops and that sort of thing, were very appropriate. It just worked really well. And I mean, again, I think this is probably one of those things where, you know, he brought in his whole crew from Atlanta. It's this well-oiled machine. They just sort of know how each other operate. And
exactly.
So you wound up with this great product. But as far as main characters and all that sort of thing, like we said before, Donald Glover plays John Smith. Maya Erskine plays Jane Smith. We've got, he's labeled in IMDb as hot neighbor. Who is the neighbor? I don't know if I'd call him hot. Maybe it's just my taste in men, Jason, but it's Paul Dano as hot neighbor. I see Paul Dano and I don't think, that's a hot neighbor.
I would tend to agree with you on that.
Like, I was really, that one really didn't fly for me when Maya Erskine's Jane was like, yeah, he's kind of like the hot neighbor. You know, I'm just like, how is this guy hot? Like, and maybe it's just content, like, based on what I've seen him in previously, I'm like, this. It's Paul Dano.
Yeah. He's like... I just watched The Batman again.
Oh, okay.
And so while I was watching, I told my wife, I'm like, he's sort of like the Crispin Glover of the 21st century.
Yeah, but probably more mentally stable.
Probably a little bit. Certainly doing a lot more acting in terms of that. But he's just this very quirky presence, right?
Yeah.
And, he picks roles that play to the type. So.
Right, sure. Then we've got John's mom, who is actually... played by Donald Glover's mom, actual mom, Beverly Glover, who actually did a great job, especially in the final episode.
Yes.
When she makes her way over to their house or their apartment, brownstone, whatever you want to call it. And she has that talk with Jane and she doesn't know what's going on. All the tension that's, you know, Jane's freaking out and mom's just kind of hanging out, having a tete-a-tete with her daughter-in-law, but she does such a good job in it. We've also got Parker Posey and Wagner Moura, who I'm not sure if I should even say
they play people.
They're both great in it. Let's just put it this way: they're agents.
Yeah, they're another Smiths.
They're other Smiths.
Yeah, that's not giving away anything.
All right, they're really they play it perfectly. They play these kind of almost douchey, almost
they're like
pretentious.
They're the seasoned. They've been doing it for the company for a while,
and they're almost cult-like in their devotion.
Sure.
To the agency.
I almost feel like if you had to have Phoebe Waller-Bridge in here, she could have done Parker Posey's part.
Other, yeah, absolutely.
Not that I am not trying to take anything away from Parker Posey. She was fabulous in this.
Yes.
But her personality, Phoebe Waller-Bridge's personality type would have worked better
absolutely
for this
perfectly. Absolutely.
And wouldn't it be funny if that was the initial intent, was that the characters are supposed to be those characters?
That would have been something else. Then we've got a bunch of different sort of, not cameos, but... you know, single episode spotlights where you've got Alexander Skarsgård in episode one as another Smith. Then you've got a character named Toby Hellinger that's played by Ron Perlman, who is this asset that John and Jane are trying to protect. And he is so good.
He's maybe my favorite thing in this whole series.
I mean, he's so funny. He plays so out of character. Out of type for who he normally is. He's like this very, like, vulnerable, just sort of like, oh, well, you know, my stomach's not good. And I don't think I can jump down that far. It's like there's this moment in the episode that he's in where they're asking him to jump down from something. And it's literally only like 3 feet. And he's like, I don't know if I can do that. That seems really dangerous. I'm not going to do that. I'm like, what? Right. And he's right. So convincing as this guy that's just kind of,
you have this whole thing where you keep thinking he's going to turn out to be some kind of badass in this episode.
Right. And
he never is.
It never happens. And then John Turturro's episode, he just plays an absolute wacko. And it's just... I mean, all of the people that play bit roles in this are fantastic.
Well, that's the beauty of this thing is that whatever the project brought, why it brought them to the project, it just brought in super quality actor people. But I also think super quality production people on top of it.
Yeah. Just a quick synopsis. In case your only knowledge of Mr. and Mrs. Smith is from the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie version. The official synopsis on IMDb says, two strangers land jobs with a spy agency that offers them a life of espionage, wealth, and travel. The catch, new identities in an arranged marriage. So in this situation, on this planet of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they basically are like, oh, by the way, you two are married now, and shenanigans ensue.
Indeed.
And I love that they were able to successfully keep a through line of the story of those two becoming an actual couple as things go on, and they go through these really dramatic and like shocking moments. And they just sort of make it through because they begin to fall for each other more or less. Like there's that through line, but each episode is so well self-contained in that it's their own separate adventures.
Right.
It almost reminds me of the Natasha, what is it, Poker?
Poker Face?
Poker Face, yeah.
Natasha Lyonne, yeah.
The Natasha Lyonne one where there's a through line with that, but you can easily break into any of the episodes and not really.
Right.
You could still, you know, you could still figure out where they are in the journey of it.
Well, yeah, because it isn't serialized, but it is. But it's also sort of a mission of the week kind of deal at the same time.
Yeah, kind of. And the other thing that I think makes this really successful, and hopefully listeners of this podcast will be able to kind of shift their normal tastes to watch this, is that it's not, I don't know if I would say it's a full-on spy series. It feels far more like a prestige drama that just happens to, the things that happen to them are in the spy world, but it's more about their relationship and the arc, the continuous arc of where that relationship goes and the issues of trust that happen because of the job that they both decided to sign up for.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is probably the single biggest difference between this show and the movie that Brangelina were in, right?
Yes.
Because that one was really just about, they were married, but didn't know.
But didn't know that each other were...
Spoiler alert. Didn't know that they were spies. And then
got orders for competing agencies, too.
Then got orders to kill one another.
Right.
Right. And so it's all about blowing up their whole life with bullets and explosives.
Right.
Not subtle at all.
No.
Right. It's definitely the Lamborghini. Much more subtle. But, you know, this one, you could have made them in any kind of a job.
Right.
That had a high stress, high secrecy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like they could have literally been computer programmers.
Right. Because this whole series is really wrapped around the idea of trust in a relationship.
Yes.
And trusting the other person.
Yes.
And so you're right. I mean, but they just took it into the spy world. And so they had to go on these missions together. And they're like, Jesus, you know, like when they, the very first episode, they have to deliver a cake. And
that's it.
And that's it. But it's an episode, man.
It's a humdinger.
It's a humdinger of an episode. It's worth watching. You know, it's quite the cake. But Yeah, I just think it's really good. I just think it's really, really good. It's funny when it's necessary to be funny, but not silly at all. It's far more of, like I said, it feels like a prestige drama. You know, the agency that they work for is this faceless entity that you barely ever find out anything about, and it's not important. It doesn't matter.
But it's funny how the agency is introduced, as they literally look like they're doing a job interview.
Yeah.
To get the position that they're in.
Right, and it's just like a computer screen, and they're just answering questions on a computer screen or voice activated or whatever it is.
They're talking, having a conversation like they're... And you look at them, and neither of them appears to be a spy.
Right. Neither one of them look physically, or even the way that they carry themselves.
Right. They're not projecting either of the characters as being a badass.
Right.
I mean, you could extrapolate that. I can't remember exactly, but it almost felt like she indicated like maybe she had been in the FBI or something prior.
Yeah.
So that was her bona fides. And you get the direct impression that Donald Glover's character had military experience.
Yes.
But nothing is ever said about any of the things other than they look like they're two people that walked in looking for answering a job ad.
Right. Yeah.
And ended up becoming spies.
Right. It's like next thing you know, oh, well, guess what? You're spies now. And this is what you're doing.
Right.
And here's your first mission, you know.
Deliver this cake.
Yeah. And all the humor that's in it, a lot of it feels just sort of situational. Mm-hmm. Granted, the situations they're in are extraordinary situations, so it heightens that. But it still feels kind of, you know, there's these moments of just sort of situational humor, or the other parts of the humor are when things go wrong. And I will say, too, that this sort of leads me to my other thing about the series, is that I really feel like the first 4 or 5 episodes, when they're still figuring everything out, is my favorite, because that's when they make all these mistakes and and all these hijinks ensue, because, you know,
they're
not in sync with each other yet. And so, you know, they accidentally double trank someone and they,
well, you know, moonlighting was great until Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd started kissing, and then it all went down.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of, yeah. And you're right. This is kind of the same sort of situation. I will say too, man, I hate to say it, but episode 6, watch out for it. Because if you're not a fan of listening to couples argue, that one's a tough one to get through. That's the one that I had a really hard time watching. The rest of it, I loved it. But that one was tough, because that one, they really delve into the relationship stuff.
Right.
And there's just enough realness in it that it just started to feel kind of toxic and kind of like, I don't want to listen. I don't want to be here while mommy and daddy are arguing anymore.
Well, and then, you know, that also speaks to the quality of the writing, the acting.
Yeah, the fact that it did make me feel so icky.
Exactly.
Says that, you know, they did a very good job of capturing that.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, if you're going in watching this, it has zero to do, literally, anything with the movie at all, other than the very basic premise.
Yes.
So, I mean, we're talking the difference between cotton candy and a fine European chocolate.
Okay? Yes, definitely. Most definitely. But if you're willing to go for the fine chocolate, I highly recommend you do so.
Absolutely.
Because I thought it was fantastic. You know, there hasn't been any... I did look up real quick to see if it's been renewed. There's no news about it. If it is renewed, it's going to be an interesting road to how they're going to pick that story up. Or if they're going to even pick it up with Donald Glover and Maya Erskine.
See, this is what I'm thinking. Maybe they come back with a different option.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe we get season 2, Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Oh, God.
I'm kidding.
I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Kidding. Honestly, yeah. Without saying too much, the ending was ambiguous enough that a decent writer could
write their
way. Do whatever
way.
They wanted.
They
to
really could. They could go one way or the other with it. Highly recommend if you have Amazon Prime, go check it out. It's definitely something to watch. But if you have seen it, you know what you should do. You should let us know about it.
Oh yeah, we're doing a telethon here because we haven't been pestering you guys to send us information for a couple months.
We've been gone for nearly 2 months. Now, we got to double pester you.
So now we're going to the timpani board. What do we got, Ed? What do we got? Boom! Still no listener interactions. Bring it on, Jerry.
But yes, please get in touch with us over the socials or over email. Like I said, all of the links are at the bottom of the show description. And hey, if you're a first-time listener and you just heard this one, and you're like, God, these guys are pretty damn good. You know what you could do for us? You could give us a review. Show the love, man.
5 old stars. That's preferred.
That is correct. On the podcast provider that you tend to employ. And that will help us get seen faster when people search for things like us.
So, and all that hashtag silly spy shit.
Hashtag silly spy shit indeed. But any last thoughts?
Glad we're back.
I'm glad we're back too.
Hope we stay.
Once again, happy in advance birthday, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Once again to everybody. 29 years old.
That's right.
For the 25th time.
That's right.
You do the math.
Well, with that, I'm Ben.
And I'm Jason.
And the CIC will return with more missions, more martinis,
and more mayhem.